And right now we have Mike Bailey on the telephone here with us. And Mike, good morning, and hope you had a good Easter.
Good morning, Tom. I did. How about you?
I hid my own Easter eggs, and I found some of them.
Well, the wind took the rest of them.
Probably it. Well, we've got a lot going on, you know, with COVID-19 and everything, and how the city has been reacting to this. And it doesn't look like we're going to be doing too much more here. Till May 4th, we're still under the declaration, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Both the ordinance and the mayor's emergency declaration will be good until May 4th. Now, that doesn't mean that if the situation changes or if the council decides that more stringent measures are needed, that they can't meet between now and then. So the May 4th was just a logical date. But again, that's not the end all be all. We've actually called two emergency meetings to enact measures related to this, and I'm absolutely certain that if that became necessary, the council would do so again.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had a little bit of a spike in some of the numbers. Have we heard back from anyone yet whether or not that might have? We got the test back from that big curbside testing that we did at Tri-County Tech.
Sure. Yeah, Carrie and I visited about that this weekend, and then this morning. So there's a couple of factors that are really influencing that. And one of them is what you just mentioned, Tom. There was, we did get some of the results back from that curbside testing. I'm not sure the total number of positives that were related to that, but we had over 100 tests taken. Mm-hmm. And I think those numbers were probably included in what you saw on Sunday, I believe. And so I think there was an increase of over 20. And I think those included at least some of our curbside. Again, I don't know the result if that's all of them or not, but there was some of them.
Okay, good.
So
good.
The amounts on Saturday, however, those had us a little more concerned. We believe that a majority of those related to an exposure at one of our long-term care facilities here in town. So
we've been trying to check that out. Indeed, is that something that has been proven to be true?
Well, we know that it occurred. We're not allowed to say which facility it is. I can tell you that they've been working with Carrie's office. They've been working with some other organizations here in town trying to get a handle on it. But yeah, there was a substantial number of cases, I believe, that were for both staff and patients. But that's really all the details I have. This is something that falls under the Oklahoma State Department of Health. So it would be more in their arena than in ours.
We're
trying to get an answer on exactly what we can disclose. Now, if you have a loved one in a long-term care facility and you're curious or you're concerned, I would suggest you call them directly. If anybody has any concerns about that, then I think that would be the best course of action, is just to call the long-term care facility to determine if they've had any positives. I think you would get an honest answer there more easily than you would trying to go through the Oklahoma Department of Health. And again, I'm talking specifically to the people that have family members or loved ones in those facilities. I don't know that if the radio station or the city started calling those care facilities, if they would disclose that they were the one. I don't know that they're required to.
That's on our list. So thank you for, you know, kind of let everybody that there was some validity to some of those things that we've been hearing. So,
yeah, it was one of those unfortunate things. It was something that we'd kind of feared, you know, that at some point in time you would have one of those areas that would produce a high concentration, and that seems to be proven to be true. I don't know, Tom. I know that this thing is going to go on, and I know that it's going to get worse before it gets better. We just hope that we've taken enough actions to slow the spread and keep our hospital from becoming overwhelmed. That was our goal. Mm-hmm. And we know that we can't stop the spread of this disease. We know only that we can slow it, and we believe and hope that the actions that we've taken will be enough to keep our hospital from being overwhelmed. That's the end goal.
All right. How's compliance been so far, as far as our businesses? Looks like everybody's playing nice so far.
Yeah, it really was a little bit of an interesting week last week. The council acted on Monday, and so we spent the week educating our businesses, and that includes everything from daycares to, you know, large retailers. We had a lot of conversations with them. Most of them were positive. Most of them understood. Our retailers, I will tell you, I'm very proud of them. They reached out to me, a lot of our local managers, some of the presidents and CEOs of national chains, and we had really great conversations with them. They are struggling to get a handle on this, just like everybody else is. But I'll tell you that every one of them I spoke to were not resistant. They were very accepting. As you know, some of our local retailers actually beat us to it. Walmart and Lowe's both had restrictions on customers in place before the city even took action. So it really was a pleasant surprise to have all of those conversations, and every one of them just wanted clarification. They're dealing with a myriad of regulations. I believe I had it described to me as a patchwork. Since there wasn't any governance issued for large retailers in Oklahoma as a rule, municipalities have stepped in to fill that void. And so every one of them that owns multiple stores is dealing with these patchworks. So they've beefed up their compliance offices, and they're doing their best. So if citizens see anything that they believe is a violation of the ordinance, they're welcome to report that. We are investigating those complaints, and that would be the easiest way to report it is at COVID-19@cityofbartlesville.org, and we're looking into every one of those. Now, if they believe they have witnessed a crime, then they can actually go to, and let me get you the exact link here, Tom. I put it, and over the weekend we issued a Q&A that answered a lot of questions. And so I would encourage anybody who has questions to go to the cityofbartlesville.org and to click on our COVID hub, and in there is this Q&A that has a lot of this information. But let me get that exact. It's towards the bottom of this, and I apparently have skimmed over it. Okay, sorry. So this would be if to file a complaint directly with the police department and have them investigate violations of this, you would go to cityofbartlesville.org /public-safety/COVID-complaints. And so that's a really super easy way. It's a quick form. It doesn't require a whole lot of information. We do have our online complaint form that citizens can use for other types of complaints, but it asks for a lot of information about property damage and things like that we just didn't think was necessary and was a little bit confusing. So we have we've created this. It's very streamlined, very simple, and easy for the public to use.
All right, very good. The mayor, of course, late last week, issued out a letter to the media and also a verbal reading of that for us here at radio, urging people to utilize the city's websites and its various platforms, including City Beat, to get some of the information as it's coming in from the state as well.
Yeah, and that's a great source. If people want to know what the city's response is and the information that we're working with, we're sharing that via City Beat. There's one scheduled to go out later today that encompasses exactly what you just talked about, Tom. It's got the mayor's letter. It also has a copy of this Q&A that we issued over the weekend. So I think that's a great source, and I appreciate you mentioning it because it is a great way for people to get information. They can go to cityofbartlesville.org, just look at the right side of your screen once you're there, and there'll be an easy way to sign up. Just pop in your name, your email address, and you'll start getting it.
Very good. We're talking with City Manager Mike Bailey, City of Bartlesville, today on City Matters. It is 8:39. We're 21 away from 10. And, Mike, there's a whole lot of city business going on besides COVID-19 enforcement.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing. I've been consumed with this, and, of course, the council has as well, so we haven't done a whole lot. I personally haven't done a whole lot, but the city's still open. Our facilities may be closed to the public. That's for our employees' protection and for the public's protection as well. We still are accepting applications for permits. We're still reviewing plans. So all of those things are continuing. There's a lot of projects that are going on. If downtown's not super busy right now, because a lot of the people that were working downtown are now working from home, but we've got downtown pretty well torn up right now. So it actually worked out well that this was the time that we had people, not as many people downtown. There's a large drainage project that's going on that has a lot of the east-west streets closed. And then we also have, of course, the Tower Center. And I drive by it every day, and it's something that kind of lifts the spirits. That is still on track. That was supposed to be scheduled for a grand opening on May 1st. Obviously, the grand opening, the ceremony itself has been rescheduled. But the park itself is still scheduled for an opening on May 1st. So we believe that we'll still be completed with that. And it's something that I know for anybody that's been involved in it, it's been a long process. It's a very exciting project. So we all kind of drive by it occasionally, and we feel a little bit better to see something like that going on in the midst of all of this.
Very good. Very good. So getting back to COVID-19, your special advisory committee, it seems like they've really been putting a lot of thought to a lot of things, probably to a degree that some might not have reached. But then again, we're talking with doctors, we're talking with business people, we're talking with a good cross-section of people here in Bartlesville that are on this committee.
Yeah, it really was. It's a great group that they came up with some. They covered a lot of areas I don't think that we as government officials would have thought about. Mm-hmm. And some of the things that they covered ended up, well, actually, everything they covered ended up in the ordinance that was passed last Monday. It just might not have been in the form that the committee was recommending. So the committee had some recommendations about daycares and retailers. There was also some things in there about garage sales, estate sales, and things of that nature. All of that was the nucleus of the council's discussion a week ago on Monday night. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the two main focuses ended up being daycares and retailers, in particular large retailers. I think we'd all seen that and were a little concerned that here we are encouraging social distancing. We do have essential businesses that the governor and the city believe should remain open. But the manner in which people were going about their shopping in some of those large businesses caused concern. So the council took a great approach when it came to the retailers.
Uh-huh.
They limited the number of customers. Mm-hmm. Now, the way that they did that was that they went and looked at what some of the voluntary restrictions that Walmart and Lowe's had already placed on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It was an interesting thing because we were using a formula that was one of the most strict in the state, and it actually came from Lawton, Oklahoma, was the first one that I found that had implemented it. Mm-hmm. And Lawton's formula was to allow one customer per 500 square foot of building space for a retailer. So that's really what we went into the meeting considering. As the Lowe's as their restrictions came out, they set theirs at 250. Walmart set theirs at 250. Lowe's set theirs at 150. So we really kind of went back and looked at our formula and realized that we weren't actually being as strict as what the retailers were imposing upon themselves. So the council cranked that down. It ended up being one customer per 800 square feet, and that approximated about what Lowe's and Walmart had already implemented for theirs. So it's a... One of the concerns, of course, was that if you do one customer per 800 square feet, a shop with, 900 square feet, they're limited to one or two customers. The council, that wasn't their intent. And so they went ahead and put a minimum number as well. So a business can do, you do your formula by taking your square footage of your entire building. This is not just the space that the customers use. It's the entire building. Divide by 800 and round up. And if that number is less than 6, then you get to use 6 as your baseline. We didn't dictate to businesses how they're to go about monitoring that because every business is a little bit different. Instead, we left it up to them. But it is mandatory that they monitor the number of customers in their business at all times and don't exceed that maximum. So, for Walmart, they had already limited access, and they had counters as people came in and out so that they have a real-time count of what's going on in their store. They're obviously a very large store. They can't stand at the counter and look out and know how many customers they have. For a small retailer, that has eyesight over the entire store, it's very easy for them to know that they have 4 people in there. So it wasn't necessary for us to dictate those terms. Instead, it was left up to the stores. And again, we're looking at it from a perspective that we've by formula, we've dictated the maximum amount of customers, and then it is up to the store to ensure enforcement of that. And I will tell you that we do receive complaints. If anybody is violating it, we will certainly find out. The citizens of Bartlesville have been very good at policing this ordinance for us.
Indeed, they have. You know, I've noticed that even some of the smaller retailers that are open, namely convenience stores, have really been keeping a close eye on the amount of people in there. They're well aware of how many can or should yeah. safely be in there, and they've been doing a good job. I have to really credit them. They really, that would be the place where you could kind of take your eye off the ball there, if you're especially you're the only person in there and you're trying to get everything Absolutely. Done. But they've done a great job.
And that was one that we knew would be a challenge because, you know, we've got some great convenience stores in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, and they turn over a lot of customers in a hurry. So we knew it would be a challenge for them. And they're one of the main reasons that we didn't try to dictate how you go about monitoring and controlling that, because they do a good job. They're extremely well run. And again, they run a lot of customers and they run them through there in a hurry. So, We had a lot of conversations with them last week. I spoke to several of the convenience stores, and again, they were more than happy to comply. I'll tell you, Tom, it really was an interesting and enlightening. Some of the managers that we spoke to were relieved. They weren't resistant to the idea; they were relieved because these requirements allowed them to go in and make those restrictions, whereas they might not have felt comfortable doing it on their own before. I didn't have any managers that called me and were upset about this. It was usually exactly the opposite.
I imagine so. I know that probably here for the last month or so, many of the folks who are at your level and around your level with the city have been putting in endless hours, and every day is probably starting to look a little bit the same, kind of like Groundhog's Day. Is everybody doing okay, you know, upstairs between the years?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because there's not very many of us here.
Yeah.
And so we get by, of course, by having each other's company and having our families. And it is challenging and it can be stressful as you go through this. And it's very unusual. I come to work and it's kind of funny. My parents are home alone. I say they're home alone. They're home, and they don't leave the house very often, and so they don't have contact with me or their grandkids that live in my house. So that, you know, they had asked me or asked my kids, you know, hey, send us some videos of you all. Mm-hmm. And so I came into work one morning, and it's such a weird experience to come into this building with a grand total of six people in a 50,000-square-foot building.
Not bad.
I shot a video of that for them, and I just walked around the video, and I waved to the two other people that were in this building with me and then sent that to my parents. So it's a little surreal, but, you know, we're all doing really well. The people that I worry about are our first responders, number one. They're under a tremendous amount of stress. They are out, and they are exposed all day, every day. And we've done everything we can to limit their exposures, but at the same time, they are going to be exposed to this virus. So I do worry about them. They're suffering under a lot of stress, and they're not, we can't cut their operation back. You know, for police and fire, they're running at the level that they need to be running at. So we can't just suddenly reduce the number of those guys that we have. So if they're exposed and if they become ill, then it stresses their resources even more. So, you know, those are the guys that we're the most concerned about, guys and women, and we have both. Those are the ones that we're concerned about the most, and we try to keep an eye on them. Our dispatch is an area that we're always concerned about. Unless you've ever called 911, you have no idea what a dispatcher does, but their job is fantastically stressful on a normal day. You add in the element of this virus and all of these things, and it could get incredibly stressful in a hurry. So I really appreciate all of them. I'll tell you that in addition to that, Lisa Beeman's code enforcement staff have been the city's eyes and ears through this. So they have been the ones that have gone out and helped us evaluate what's going on. So they go out and they observe the businesses and they determine, you know, well, that was just a rumor. It looks like everything's fine over there. Or, you know, I watched them for 30 minutes and there was never more than four people in the building. So they're doing a lot of that investigation, and frankly, we wouldn't be where we are without them. So, when we say that the city's still open, we are. Our focus seems to have shifted to a large degree because some of the activity that we would have been focused on at this time of year, weeds and trash and cars and things like that, we're just not dealing with as much. So for anybody who has made a weed complaint, we apologize that it's taken us a little longer than normal, but those people, they are involved deeply in this process of trying to mitigate this illness.
Boy, like you said, it doesn't stop. It just keeps it going. And
every day is a new one, Tom. You know what? One of the things, I want to take just a second. We've tried to clarify this because this is probably the number one complaint or number one question that we get. It's not really a complaint. Sure. It's a question, and it deals with face masks. And so there's a couple of things to go over in what the council did with face masks. Number one, it dealt specifically with retail stores. And so what the council was doing is they were requiring employees of retail stores to wear personal protective equipment where it was available. We understood that there was a shortage of masks and things of that nature, mm-hmm. and so we can't hardly require people in a store to wear something that they don't have. So that was what it was, is that where it was available, we were requiring them to wear it. For customers of retail stores, the council was strongly suggesting, and it was considered that it be a requirement, but at this point in time, it was just a strong suggestion that all people who are either queuing to enter into the store, because, of course, if you're limiting the number of people in a store, then their lines can form outside. So all people who are queuing to enter in or while they're in the store, it is strongly suggested that they wear a mask. Now, this wasn't something that the council just pulled out of the air. This is actually a CDC recommendation, and this is a change from where the CDC was probably 2 weeks ago, maybe even just a week ago. But we want to be clear that the masks we're talking about for those customers are not N95 masks. There is a shortage of those masks. Those are to be reserved for first responders, for healthcare professionals, and for contagious patients. What the council was referring to is what's called a procedural mask, and that's one that you would commonly see in a doctor's office. They have ear loops or they tie behind the ears, but they're not the N95 certified masks. Or the other option, if you can't find those, is a cloth mask. And that's what the CDC is recommending, is that everyone wear a cloth mask when they're going somewhere where social distancing might be a challenge. So that really was what it was. So it's not a mandate that customers wear masks inside of a retail store. However, it is a strong suggestion. So if you see something, if you see a sign or something that says the city requires that, that's okay. That's fine. We don't require it. However, we are strongly suggesting it. And I think that we as a community will be much better off if everyone does wear a cloth or a procedural mask when they're outside of their homes.
All right. Very good. Very good. Now, I'm glad that you clarified that for folks because, those are some of the questions that I think everybody's getting. And sure. We're seeing a lot of things on social media where folks pretty much get it right or halfway get it right, but it's somewhat incomplete. They're trying real hard. But sometimes you need to ask one more question.
There's a lot of information out there, Tom. I understand. We are all overwhelmed with the amount of information. And at times it seems to contradict itself. So one of the things that we would always ask is that people, use a credible source. Go to a known credible source to get your information because there's plenty of half correct information out there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. We've been chasing down a lot of things today that didn't appear to be on the surface, and it turned out that there were elements that were absolutely factual. So it's been a challenge. But like you said, go to a site where they do their homework, and that would be us. That would be City B. There's a few others out there that do a great job too, but There's a lot of word on the street, and sometimes pieces are left out, because not everybody has the greatest of memory or what have you. So always double check. I would always double check.
Absolutely. Well, and Tom, so talking still about the ordinance and the things that were required in there, I think from a retail perspective, we covered that pretty well. But one of the other probably the other hottest topic was dealing with daycares.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a lot of information from both sides. As you know, the advisory board actually recommended the closure of all daycares, and it was just a blanket closure was what the recommendation was. From the time that meeting convened, which would have been two Tuesdays ago, and the council meeting on Monday, there was a lot of discussion, a lot of research, and the council elected not to close the daycares. Instead, they elected to modify how those daycares are allowed to operate. So what they did was that they said that the only children allowed to be in daycares are the children for essential workers, as defined by the governor's executive order and the Oklahoma Department of Commerce. So if you don't have another caregiver in your house and you are employed, or you and your spouse are both employed in an essential job, then you're allowed to send your child to daycare. But the daycares then were required to reduce their ratios. And the intent was to further split those groups of kids up. The state had already done this, by the way. So the state had split them, I believe, in half from what the standard is.
Mm-hmm.
And the city further reduced that. So most of the children in daycares now should be in groups of four or five kids with each teacher. And there was to be a physical separation between groups. Now, the concern from some of the daycares was that they didn't have enough space. If you cut it in half again, I don't have enough rooms to separate them out. So what we did allow them to do is to erect physical barriers to split spaces into two spaces. So in other words, if the state allows you to have 10 kids with one teacher in one room, we allow you to have five kids with one teacher in one room. However, you can split that room with a physical barrier and still serve 10 kids in the same space. They just have to be separated. So the idea, again, was to split them into smaller groups, trying to prevent that cross-contamination. We've spoken to several physicians, and they've told us that children often are silent carriers. So that was a great concern. Those were the measures that were taken by council as far as daycares go. So that was also part of the educational process last week. I expect that everybody should be operating in accordance with the ordinance by this week, as far as daycares and retail both. So we'll be doing some spot checks on compliance and things of that nature. And again, as you and I've talked about, this really seemed to be very well accepted by these businesses. They understand the situation that we're all in and that they can be part of the solution.
Very good. I tell you what, there's a good community spirit. I know everybody's kind of tired of it all, but they realize that we got to make sure that we do it right.
And, yeah.
I think that's the issue there.
Yeah, there was some great community church services over the weekend were done. A lot of them were done by Facebook and things of that nature. So we truly appreciate the churches in Bartlesville continuing to minister to their parishioners, but do it in a way mm-hmm. that's responsible and limits the spread of the illness. So that was a great solution. Facebook Live seemed to be a fantastic tool that allowed that to happen. And just about everybody has some sort of Facebook account anymore. So that was a great solution for them, and I appreciate them, again, being responsible and taking the appropriate steps on that. One of the things that I think the council and myself and my staff all want everybody to keep in mind is that this is an emergency. So these measures, these are not permanent measures. These are not things that are intended to infringe on anyone's civil liberties. These are just a response to an emergency. Once the emergency's gone, these measures will be withdrawn. So this isn't, again, these aren't permanent restrictions. There's a lot of debate on whether cities had the right to do this. We went through a lengthy legal process to determine whether we did or not.
Mm-hmm.
And the state does grant municipalities broad powers under a declaration of emergency, which is what we're operating under right now. So we believe that everything that we have done is allowed. Everything the state has done is allowed under law. But again, there's no illusions here. This is incredibly inconvenient, but it was done for the greater good, and it was done on a temporary basis. This will pass, one way or another. Tom, this will pass.
Indeed, it will. And if we all work together, it'll be a smoother reentry. Mike, I want to thank you for being with us here, Mike Bailey, City Manager. It's time now for news, and I appreciate your time and appreciate all that you're doing.